What's up, hockey fans? It's one-on-one with Joe O'Donnell. I am Joe O'Donnell. Daryl Hall and John Oates bringing you a little theme music, a little bumper music in the background. A little one-on-one with Hall and Oates. Great tune, great 80s tune. Assuming it's an 80s tune, not late 70s. Daryl and John would correct me, of course, if I was wrong. Any Hall and Oates maniacs out there, crazy fans, would probably know the difference as well. But either way, love Daryl and John. Mentioned that back on episode one. This is episode three. If you missed episode one with Alex Stalock, the Minnesota Wild netminder, please check it out. And episode two, Derek Lalonde, Tampa Bay Lightning assistant coach, former head coach of the Iowa Wild, was kind enough to join me right after that crazy five overtime game between the Lightning and the Columbus Blue Jackets in the 2020 Stanley Cup playoffs. So again, please subscribe, like, review, all those things to this podcast. Hopefully you're listening on either Anchor.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. Anywhere you can get your podcast, you can find this one-on-one with Joe O'Donnell. My guest later here on episode three will be Curtis Gabriel, the one-time Iowa Wild winger, an NHLer for parts of his career as well, hailing from Newmarket, Ontario, and one of the more liked Iowa Wild players, very likable, sort of a fan favorite for his role on the early year teams with the Iowa Wild. He'll join me in just a couple of minutes for a very lengthy conversation, one that we talk a little hockey, but a lot about life and Gabriel's involvement in the You Can Play program, and really just a lot about inclusion and his efforts as a person to just not only better himself, but to learn more, to grow as a person, and hopefully help the game of hockey, but help society as a whole as well, I think is probably a good way to put it. So a really great conversation. Enjoyed talking with him yesterday. Didn't get a chance to put the finishing touches on this podcast until today, but it was great to have Gabe's on for about a half hour or so and talk about a number of topics. I hope you'll find that interview coming your way here in a minute very interesting, and hopefully take some observations from it and do what you want with it. But again, appreciate all the support in the early going. It's been great having sort of a platform for me to speak on hockey and other things that are going on in the world of hockey or the world of sports. And obviously, it's a very unique time for us right now. The Stanley Cup playoffs have been put on hold. So you think about the pandemic halting the season, the uncertainty that our whole nation and world really went through. Now you get the bubbles going. The players are coming back. They're sacrificing so much, leaving their family and friends and, you know, having to restart their training programs and all these things that go into this bubble lifestyle in Toronto and Edmonton, down to the final eight teams. The second round is already rolling. And now the NHL postponing for a couple of days because of the latest incident of police brutality, or whatever term you want to use, social injustice, systemic racism. I think any of those terms would really apply to this situation. Not going to dive too deep into it because that's not what this podcast is about, but the league took a stance and postponed games for a couple of days. And I certainly, you know, one thing I will take from this, I don't know, this world we're living in and this scenario that's in front of us with the sports world, you know, being paused because of a virus, because of a pandemic, then restarting and now being paused for certainly a cause that, you know, deserves our attention. And I thought it was nice to see the entire National Hockey League come together, really solidify white athletes, black athletes, coming together for a cause. And, you know, postponing games, you can agree with it, you can disagree with it, but the bottom line is the athletes wanted to make a statement. The athletes wanted to send a proverbial message. I think they've done that. The bigger part now, of course, will be, you know, the change that comes of it, hopefully change for the better, not just in hockey, but in all walks of life. And I think that, you know, certainly the one thing I will take from all of this is just the way that the athletes came together to use their platform to bring about a conversation or to spread a message that they felt needed to be heard by a lot of people. And good for them to come together and make those decisions as a group, to be unified as a group. It was nice to see, again, different types of athletes, Europeans, Canadians, Americans, black, white, didn't matter, all standing for the same cause and deciding that this is what they needed to do to use their platform to the best of their ability. And so we'll see what shakes out of it long term. Obviously, you know, it's the next steps that are going to be most important. But I applaud the National Hockey League for the unification that they showed, the message they relayed, players first, from the various bubbles, Edmonton and Toronto, over the last 24 hours or so. Did have some big news in the, by the way, have been absolutely loving the Stanley Cup playoffs. I've mentioned that on both podcasts so far. Excited for the return to play in episode one. Really excited about what I saw in episode, you know, when we talked in episode two about the early going and the round robin play and the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And now we're in round two. And I think, again, if you keep in mind the sacrifice these players are making, not only on the ice but away from the ice, leaving their families and friends and their relatives for so long to chase this dream of the Stanley Cup, I think, you know, you could argue that the sacrifice needed to win this cup may be greater than the sacrifice needed to win any other cup. And I'm not talking, again, on the ice. It's still going to be, you know, 16 wins or more if you played in the round robin. But I'm talking about the fact that these athletes are human beings, and that's something we've heard a lot the last couple of days. It's not just about sports to them. They have lives. They have families. They're people. And they have emotions and feelings and all those things that any of us would go through if we were stripped of our family or had to leave our family for upwards of 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks. I mean, you know, the longest road trip any of us go on in professional hockey is, you know, at the minor league level, 10 days to 2 weeks, maybe a touch longer. Think about being gone for 50 or 60 days, which, you know, some of these teams, if they keep playing and try and win the Stanley Cup, are going to be without their families for that long. So I think the sacrifice needed to win this cup, when we look back on it, may be as great as any championship ever handed out. But I've enjoyed every second of the Stanley Cup playoffs so far. Looking forward to them resuming, of course, once they do get back up and running. But we did have some big news in the Minnesota Wild organization this week. Some good, some maybe not so good, depending on which side of the fence you're on. We'll start with what would be deemed good news, and that's the promotion, essentially, of two Iowa Wild coaches, assistant coach Brett McLean and goaltending development coach Freddie Shabbat, both promoted to the Minnesota Wild staff, both added to Dean Evason's staff. Remember, Dean Evason was an assistant in Minnesota when he took over for Bruce Boudreau, who was relieved of his head coaching duties prior to the pandemic pause. Essentially, that meant then Minnesota was looking for an assistant. So Brett McLean, who's been with the organization now for three seasons, gets an opportunity to go to the NHL. He played over 300 NHL games in his career. He had a long career in Europe as well. He's won a lot as a player. He was a great addition to the Iowa Wild coaching staff on a personal level. I love him to death. He's got a great family. He's got a great smile and sort of way about going things, you know, a way about just his approach daily that I think if you spend time around Brett McLean, that rubs off on you. And so it's great to see him get an opportunity. I think he'll be a big get for the Minnesota Wild staff. He's a player's first kind of guy, but he wants to win as badly as anybody else. He works his tail off. Last year, he ran the Iowa Wild defense and the power play. The two previous seasons, he worked with the penalty killers and the forwards. So essentially, as an assistant coach at the AHL level, he's done it all now. So you got to like that sort of skill set and that diversity on his resume. So congratulations to Coach Mack, Brett McLean, now a member of the Minnesota Wild staff. And then you have Freddie Shabbat, who was with the organization for 5 years. I don't want to say in a variety of roles, but early on in his tenure, Freddie wasn't at every game. He would do some scouting for the organization. He would do some consulting, working with goaltending prospects. But by the end of his time here in Iowa, again, 5 years with the organization, he was essentially the day-to-day goalie coach for Kaapo Kähkönen and Matt Robson the year prior with Andrew Hammond and Kaapo Kähkönen. And, you know, working with a Derek Barabeau and Allen of the ECHL and some of the other prospects, whether it be in Traverse City or development camp or training camp. And so when you have a guy that has the experience that he does, a long professional playing career, including a 1999 Turner Cup championship with the Houston Aeros in the old IHL, and time previously in the NHL as the Edmonton Oilers goalie coach, where he got to work with Devan Dubnyk when he was with the Oilers. I think you got, another nice addition for the Minnesota Wild staff, a guy with a ton of experience and a guy that particularly in person knows what's in the system. You know, he knows Dubnyk as well as anybody. He knows Stalock as well as anybody. He knows Kähkönen, Robson, He's had a chance to work with Derek Barabow, as I said. Hunter Jones, a draft pick, who's coming up through the system, will turn pro this year. So Freddie Shabbat, again, another guy, great personality, fun to be around, understands the goaltending industry, the techniques, and all those things go into making a great coach. It's not just on the ice. It's got to be away from the rink, the work ethic, that competitiveness, the drive to be better, and then, of course, the personality, too. You got to have guys in today's day and age that can relate to athletes, that can work with young kids, and both Coach McLean and Coach Shabbat are more than capable of that. I wish them both the best of luck. It was nice working with them, getting to know them on a personal level. I consider them both friends, and certainly just awesome for the organization. I tweeted this the other day, but when you consider Derek Lalonde, you consider John Torchetti, now Coach McLean, Coach Shabbat, you're talking about Iowa being a sort of a stepping stone for guys to get to the NHL level. Now, Shabbat and Torchetti had been in the NHL previously, but coming to Iowa and reestablishing themselves in some ways in their career helped them get back again. You go back to my days in Houston, Minnesota's AHL team when they were the Houston Arrows. Spent five seasons there. Mike Yeo was Houston's coach and got promoted to Minnesota. Mike Van Ryn was an assistant with John Torchetti. He's now an assistant coach with the St. Louis Blues. So the Minnesota Wild AHL affiliate, whether it was Houston or Iowa, just in my 12 years in the organization, 12 seasons, has turned out a lot of guys that have gone from the AHL to the NHL, and it's great to see. It's a development league, not only for the players and the officials, but for staff members, coaches, etc. And it's great to see, again, Coach McLean and Coach Shabbat get rewarded for a lot of hard work, a lot of success here in Iowa, and I wish them nothing but the best moving forward. One sort of down note for the organization, though, that we just got news of is that Brennan Manel has signed in the KHL, Russia's top league. He has agreed to a deal with Minsk in Belarus. Michael Russo, The Athletic, first tweeting it out. Somebody sent me a screenshot, and they were like, what's this about? Can you confirm? So I FaceTimed Brennan Manel. I figured, why not? Might as well just see if he answers. And he did. He picked up. He was at the airport getting ready to essentially check in and see you later, USA, and on to the KHL. Look, it's a big loss for the Iowa Wild. It's a big loss for the Minnesota Wild. He was a first team AHL All-Star at the end of the year voting. And there's only a couple of those spots, obviously. We have two defensemen on the first team and the second team. He had a great year, top five in the league amongst points for blue liners, running the team's power play for a few years. Plus, he's a Minnesota boy, a Woodbury native, made his NHL debut this year. You know he would have loved to stay in the organization if he thought it was right for him. At the end of the day, hockey is a business. These players only have so many years to get the most out of their career. Brennan Manel making the decision that with the KHL starting up sooner rather than later, the American Hockey League right now on hold, and he was a restricted free agent. If the numbers weren't right, the initial talks with Minnesota, I'm never going to fault a guy for going and playing in Europe. You know, it certainly hurts the organization. I'm sad to see him go. I really love that kid, and he had a lot of upside, a lot of great memories of him running the blue line on that power play the last couple years. A lot of the Iowa Wild success on the man advantage goes right back to 27, Brennan Manel. But good luck to him. He told me he's hoping to go and have a great year and basically help his career, and he hopes to be back in North America. So we wish Brennan Manel nothing but the best, but that's another big hole now that Iowa will have to fill, and Minnesota will have to fill in the depth chart as well. Again, free agency is going to be different this year. You're looking at more of an October free agency for your big-name guys, your NHL contracted players. We've seen some re-signings and some sort of depth chart signings by a lot of organizations, more AHL, ECHL type players. The big boys are going to get signed when NHL free agency kicks off in October after the Stanley Cup is handed out, and that's when the Manels of the world would have most likely gotten new deals, if not sooner. And then, of course, unrestricted free agency there as well, when you can start to add some veteran players to fill the void from guys that may have moved on from various organizations, especially at the AHL level. But wish nothing but the best for Brennan Manel as he kicks off the European part of his career, signing a one-year deal in the KHL in Minsk. And he told me his first game's on Saturday, and here I am finishing up this podcast on Friday. So Brennan Manel could be in the lineup as early tomorrow in Russia's top league, the KHL. All right, quick break, quick word from Anchor.fm, then a conversation with Curtis Gabriel. Again, please subscribe, like, comment, rate, all those things you do with podcasts. I want to get this out there to as many ears as possible, but a very healthy conversation coming up next with the former Iowa Wild tough guy, Curtis Gabriel. We will cover a number of topics, including his time in Iowa, the impact his mother Kim has had not only on his career, but his life. And we'll spend some time talking as well about sort of the brand that Curtis Gabriel is building up on his social media platforms and his always willingness to dive into some social issues and, of course, his involvement in the You Can Play community and focusing on inclusion in the great sport of hockey. So quick word from Anchor.fm, then Curtis Gabriel here, as this is Episode 3 of One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell. My guest today on One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell is Curtis Gabriel, the former Iowa Wild winger and a former third-round draft pick of the Minnesota Wild back in 2013. 38 career NHL games and parts of 5 years with the Iowa Wild. He's the all-time leader in Iowa Wild penalty minutes, just under 400 in that category, and fourth most games played in Iowa Wild history. Curtis Gabriel, my man Gabes, how are you, buddy?
Wow, I knew you were going to take me way back with this podcast, but that was a hell of a way to bring me back to those days. But JoJo, I really appreciate you having me on. I was super excited to see you starting this thing, and I love catching up with you anytime I can. You're just an A-plus person, buddy.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, to be honest, at some point I probably would have, as this podcast moved along, reached out to you and a lot of former Wild players and guys that, you know, sort of blast from the past for the fan base. But the work you've been doing at social activism and, you know, just inclusion and hockey is for everyone, all those things that are, you know, really at the surface right now on social media, and you just seem to be taking advantage of your platform. I thought it'd be a great opportunity to chat with you. You seem to be gaining a lot of steam in your many initiatives and sort of that activism role. And so I do want to get there with you as well as go down the memory lane with the Iowa Wild. But I guess first off, update our fans on where you are in the world and what you've been up to.
Yeah. So I've made London, Ontario, my home base the last three summers. It's kind of nice. Like, I've kind of bounced around. As you know, Joe, I trained all over North America, trying to get better, trying to follow whatever I thought at the time would make me the best hockey player. And for better or for worse, I've ended up back here in London, and I have a great setup. I have a best trainer I've ever been with, a great group of guys to train with, and just a great little kind of city, not too big, not too small, hour and a half west of Toronto. Got a lovely new girlfriend who's from just close to here, and really just using this time, this strange time in the world, to kind of reinvent myself.
You've always been a guy that not only worked hard on and off the ice and taking care of your body and making sure that you were physically fit, but I always, you know, was at least curious in your mental approach to the game. At times you would be, you know, sort of honest and admit that you could get in your own way. At times I know you really thought about the mental side of the game and how important that was, and whether it was sports psychology or just understanding your body, all those things. With what's going on in the world today and where we're at, how much have you really just sort of at times taken a break from the game and just thought about your place in this world and how you can impact things?
Yeah, that's what I did really early on. I mean, coming back as soon as the season was suspended, you know, coming home, getting to spend some time with my mom. First time I've spent, you know, 3-4 months straight with her in 8 years, right? So I came home kind of with my tail between my legs, honestly. I had finished the year before with the New Jersey Devils and really thought I had a chance to be a full-time NHLer, at least have a good chance. And to sign with Philly, that I thought, obviously, with Chuck Fletcher and Brent Flair there, would be the best option for me. And it really went the opposite way of the way it was supposed to. And I think it's very strange how life works. So I came home and just really had to look myself in the mirror and basically pull myself up again and pull up the socks and realize that hockey is not everything in life, but let's put life first and family first and getting back on my feet mentally, just to the point where I want to be excited to play hockey. I don't want to just, you know, grind through it. Like, I want to go back to those days when I was 16 trying to make the OHL, where I didn't care what anybody thought of me and I just wanted to compete. And I think through the work I've done with introspection, writing about myself through this self-authoring program, talking with my brother, talking with my family, having a great new relationship where she pushes me, it's really made me a better person. And I'm trying not to look back now. I want to plant my tree now of being an all-around person, not just a hockey player. And if I get to play hockey, that's great.
before we go too much further, how can our fans, the listeners to this podcast, follow more about what you're doing, whether it be social media or any of your other initiatives?
Yeah, best place to find me is Instagram, Curtis, at Curtis Gabriel _. I'm also on Twitter, at Curtis Gabriel, and then I just got a little YouTube channel going that's in the infancy stages. So those are my three platforms I like to use.
Youth hockey has been something that you've always been passionate about, even from your time with the Iowa Wild, whether it's going to a local practice or what have you. And I've noticed a lot of your stuff on Instagram, some sort of stick handling tutorials. You're putting yourself out there, which takes a lot of gumption, to be quite honest. You know, hockey can be a difficult place. Your teammates, guys against you with the chirps and whatnot, but you're out there showcasing your skills, but also trying to educate the younger players today.
Yeah, why not, right? Like, I would have loved when I was a kid to jump on Instagram. You know, it wasn't as a thing back then. And
right.
to see a guy doing what I'm doing. I'm trying to be as 100% open and authentic as I possibly can. Obviously, I need to skirt the line of being a professional hockey player, and hockey's an insular sport with the dynamics. So I have to push the line but never cross it. I want to be a guy that's never going to, you know, leak team information or say things I shouldn't. But what I can say is I can inspire the young kids and inspire them, hopefully, not only to be a good hockey player and improve their game there, but just to be a good person in general, a good, upstanding person in society. I think we all have an obligation to do some of that. And I think the world lacks a hell of a lot of accountability these days. The word keeps coming up for me. And it just bothers me that people want to work so hard at their personal things, but they can't set aside an hour or half an hour a day to educate themselves on these social things and see how they can make a difference. And I promise you, it's going to come back your way and it's going to make your life better.
Your mom, Kim, has been such an inspiration to you, but who are some other people that you really look up to, leaders, either on the ice as teammates or maybe it's not even in the sporting world, but people that inspire you?
Yeah, obviously my mom, my brother. Quite honestly, this guy is eventually he's going to put out a lot of stuff, but he's younger than me. He's in the processing stage. He's still learning a lot about life, but he's a very, very special person. And we've battled over the years, but we've really worked at our relationship the last time during this pandemic. And he really inspires me. Every time we talk for an hour and a half or more, and I leave that conversation feeling so good. But then as far as, not in the sport, maybe Gary Vaynerchuk. I think he doesn't touch the social issues. That's not his thing. And I think everybody, you know, he probably does it privately in his own way. Everybody does it differently. But it's just as far as his outlook on life, not caring what other people think, living for yourself, living your true self, you know, just don't let anything – it's a short life. We're all going to die. And, like, you know, I'm 27. Hopefully I got, like, 60 years left or I don't know. Why worry about what others are going to think? You know, people who are around, you're going to judge you for it. You go get into something you want to do. You might find a totally new group of friends that are going to serve you better. So I just think there's no reason not to just get up and get after it every day.
Let's spend a minute talking about your mom, Kim. Your father took his own life when you were very young. Part of me, I don't want to say selfishly, but you know, you were with the Iowa Wild for so long, and it's something that you and I really never talked about. I never really shared it with the fan base. Quite frankly, I probably didn't do enough homework and research and learn more about, you know, your upbringing. Since you've moved on NHL teams and there's been more stories written about it, you can research it now. And I feel like I've learned more about you since you've left. And so part of me is very disappointed as a broadcaster and a friend that we didn't really scratch the surface on some of those topics. But with your father passing away at such a young age, you were just 10, from my understanding. Your mom was everything for you. I mean, she was coming to road games. She was, you know, your biggest fan. I don't think that's unfair to say. Just talk about that dynamic for a moment.
Yeah, well, first of all, Dojo, don't feel bad about that at all. Like, everybody comes to their own realizations later. Like, for example, I'm doing all this social work now. My first 2 years in the American League, I didn't touch these issues. I was worried about playing hockey, right? So you learn and you grow, and you have to have that growth mindset. And I'm proud that I always have. So I wasn't really necessarily ready to talk about things as much. But yeah, my mom being the good person that she is, you know, that's probably what I value most in the world, is just being a good, decent, logical human being. And I learned from the best. If anything, she's too nice, and I've had to kind of gain some bit of like bluntness, maybe a little more aggressiveness. But she just raised me so well, you know, showed me what you make a plan and you just go and try to execute it. So whether that was Her getting me to hockey games, and then getting back at midnight or later and being up at six to get to get us up and get us off to school, and then her get to her job and mark papers all night, and then set aside time to figure out how to make me a better hockey player, and we just make a plan and go do it. So I owe everything to my mom. My stepdad Bill's been great just to have around us in the family. He's a great dude. Obviously, he can't replace my father, but he's been a great guy. But yeah, I think I'm very lucky, and I'm not blind to the fact that I've had an unbelievable upbringing.
As far as your mom goes, being a former teacher, right? She's retired, if I remember, just prior to you leaving the organization, she had hung him up, so to speak. What has she made of, kids going back to school or virtual learning, and her opinion on all of that?
I think we've actually been really focusing on, well, she's like kind of my devil's advocate as well as my brother on me dealing with these social issues. But just from what we haven't talked too much about going back to school, but just from her posts on Facebook, I think, maybe I'm going to ask her about this now, but I think she's very on the, teacher's side. I think you got to protect the teachers, and you can't just force them to go back to work. They're older. They have not as strong immune systems as these kids. As we know, it doesn't affect younger kids as much. So yeah, I think she's obviously on the teacher's side of it. She wants them to be protected because they have to go home to their own families as well. And at the end of the day, there's a lot of information on the internet, and I don't think it would hurt too bad to have a lot of kids homeschooled these days. Now, that depends if you have an absolute idiot parent that is going to teach you the wrong things. But I think as far as education of just like, going through the grades of what she taught, I think there's put some onus on the parents and families to educate their kids. And I don't think it's the most, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world.
Curtis Gabriel, my guest here, one-on-one with Joe O'Donnell on Anchor.fm, as well as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, you name it. Please subscribe, rate, review, like, and all those sorts of things so we can continue to grow this podcast a bit. Really appreciate your time here today, Gabes. And, the You Can Play initiative and your support for the LGBTQ community is something that has gotten a lot of attention recently. From again, what I've read and the research I've done, it wasn't something that you necessarily thought you'd be involved in maybe years ago. But I want you to tell me and our listeners about that February 25th, 2019 night. You're playing for the Devils in New Jersey. It's their Pride night, and then take us from there.
Yeah, I had just scored my first NHL goal 2 nights earlier against the Ottawa Senators, and confidence was at a new high. And playing the Montreal Canadiens again at home in Jersey, I was quite focused on playing that game. But having a Pride night, having the experience I did that previous summer of an ex-girlfriend's friends who were a lesbian couple, and the one came out to be in the relationship, and her parents, who were wealthy people, decided to stop financially supporting her. Kind of minimally emotionally supported her, and she was just this most like the nicest, most sweetheart of a human, like kind of like how I view my mom. Like, how could you ever, have a thing wrong with this kind of person? And I kind of was like, wow, that's the first time as a naive white cisgender male pro hockey player that I'd ever seen something like that close to me. And I think it was a good wake up call. So when that Pride Night approached, we were instructed to put the pride tape on the blades of our stick, and I was just trying to stick in the NHL, Jojo. You know how players want to stick to things that are working. I was like, I'm not going to put that on a blade of my stick. I'm going to put it on the shaft of my stick so it doesn't kind of bother me with my black tape I like to use. So after warm up, we came in, and guys were taking the tape off, putting the regular tape back on, and I'm in the corner of the room because I'm the new guy and the tough guy. I was right beside the speaker. I don't mind. I love it. And I look over at my stick and I go, oh, well, like it would be harder for me to just take the time to take that off than to just leave it on. And it was just two, and maybe somebody will notice and feel more included in hockey. It was a 2 second decision, and I went back to focusing on playing the Montreal Canadiens, and had a great game. Scored my second NHL goal. It was a goal that's I'm supposed to score a hard-working, gritty goal, show some hands, and have. And I kind of saw it going in. I knew I was going to score, and I had room to celebrate and let all that emotion that I've always. All the work I'd put into training kind of came out there, and going after hockey, and to score that goal on the first night I use it on a Pride night, kind of scored a big goal for inclusion. And people after the game were blowing up my phone for that, and just for having another good game. So it kind of took on a life of its own there. I find a lot of things have happened organically for me, Joe. Like even getting into playing high level hockey at 15, 16, I didn't. It was not a plan at all. All these other guys in the NHL knew they were going to be high-end players. My mom just suggested I go try out, and I was like, okay. and I just fall into everything organically, and just follow my heart. So I think it's been an amazing journey. This community of people is the best community of people you're ever going to find, the most accepting people. And I'm so privileged to be a part of, helping them get what they deserve, really respect.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go next. It's just, what have you learned sort of about that community, and I guess really, in some ways they need all the support they can get from, whether it's folks that are of the same beliefs and of the same lifestyles, or somebody like yourself that maybe doesn't come from the same community or follow the same things that some of those folks do in their decisions, but to just be able to show that support for them, I'm sure goes a long way.
Yeah, they're just, like I said, they're just the most accepting people. Like, they know what it's like to feel judged for something that they can't control. It just boggles my mind that in 2020, people feel like they have the right to tell other people how to live their lives. Sure, you can care. Sure, you can disagree, maybe, but you cannot tell anyone how to live their life. And that's why people fought these wars. That's why, thank goodness, we beat Adolf Hitler and the Axis powers. If we didn't, we wouldn't live in a democratic world. So why are, like, I just don't understand the thought process of that. It's none of your frickin' business to think about who a person loves, or how they want to express themselves. And if you're going to start pulling up statistics like, oh, the suicide rate's high and all this crap, it's like, first of all, it's none of your business. That's their life. They can do whatever they want to their body and how they live their life. And second of all, maybe you shouldn't stop judging these people so harshly, and maybe they won't stop taking their own lives and living a scared existence. So it's brought nothing but love into my life, and it's been minimal hate. I think I somewhat attribute that to me being a quite aggressive person, Joe. I've never been a fighter off the ice, but on the ice I am, and I'm very passionate when I speak, and I don't back down. So it's been all love, and we have some great things coming. Brock McGillis, former pro hockey player, the first player in hot pro hockey to come out after his career as gay, is just signed a contract with the Ontario Hockey Federation. That's the OHL down to grassroots, to run all the inclusion, diversity, racism, homophobia, wellness, everything. And we are gonna change the next generation for the better.
That's awesome. I can just hear, Gabe, the passion in your voice when you talk about this stuff. You've always been passionate, as you mentioned, aggressive on the ice, but I never got that sense from you off the ice. Always well spoken, always respectful, and certainly I can just hear from the way you talk about this stuff just how much it really has meant to you. Another issue, of course, that our country's going through right now is a lot of social injustice and police brutality in a lot of ways, and have you spoken to any former teammates or worked on any platforms to try and help raise awareness and obviously bring about change for what right now is a tough time for a lot of people?
Yeah, so with the LGBTQ2S plus community, I'm in a much more advanced stage of my allyship. I'm much more educated on it, so I'm still in the infancy of being an ally to the Black Lives movement. So really, the tipping point for me was when the George Floyd murder and the videos that came out. I think it was one specific video. It wasn't even from the recent. It was a couple years back in Louisiana, where some woman was just so angrily, peacefully protesting, and it just hit me different. And since then, I've been educating. It's going to take some time. It's such a complex issue. And I don't feel like I'm ready to totally speak on it, but I want to listen and learn. I'm trying to accumulate as much knowledge as possible. I have my opinions so far, but I don't think they're ready to be shared. I need to build, like, the context and how I do it. But all I know is that politics is becoming way too much a part of it. And I just don't understand why we can't decide that this is a human issue and not a political issue. That's the most I'll say right now, but I just just boggles my mind the way we're at. But I'm committed to learning more and doing whatever I can down the road, and whether that's through our LGBT stuff, because LGBTQ2S plus is not just homosexuality and everything under the sun. It's really for everyone. It's for everyone of every gender, every color, every creed, every everything. So looking forward to doing it through there. But yeah, I don't want to speak on it too much, but I do know that I do stand with the NBA, the WNBA, the MLS, and what was the other league? The
Major League
MLB.
Baseball, yeah.
Yeah, on what they're doing. I think in the short term, a large public demonstration that's going to ripple across the entire world is what can be done to continue to raise public awareness. I almost view it as like how, you know, there's people that smoke, but they're kind of looked down upon, are they not? Like, it's your own world to smoke and you can decide to smoke, but it's kind of disgusting at this point in 2020. It's like, why are you smoking those cancer sticks? I think it needs to get to the point of the same thing with racism and you know, judging someone any other on anything other than their character, their work ethic, just you know, giving them the basic human rights. So I hope things like this slowly build it, and we're going to slowly chip away at this thing.
Let's talk about some of your time on the ice now as we switch gears here with Curtis Gabriel here on One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell. What's a normal training day for you like? I know as we couldn't get things rolling yesterday. I had a little power outage out here. And then as we were trying to figure out a time to connect today, you were talking about going for a run, your skating routine. So what's a training day look like for Curtis Gabriel these days?
Oh man, I hope you got some time here. I've taken it to another level. I feel like I'm almost freed to have more energy now that I'm not in this mental vacuum of I have to make it, I have to make it. You know, I do, believe me, I do want to make it. And my dream is still to win a Stanley Cup, not just be in the NHL. But I do know now that it's not everything and I have a life outside of it. So it's almost like I have freedom of outcome. Whatever's going to be is going to be, and it's going to be great. So I'm selling out on training. I'm doing basically 2 to 3 workouts a day, 2 minimum. I try to skate in the morning when I'm fresh to really get the most out of my skills because that's where I need to improve the most. And then I try to stick handle on top of that, shoot pucks on top of that, and then I'm going to start doing my runs and my workouts and my that kind of stuff at night. So I'm kind of fully charged with energy to go hit it hard again. So I don't want to. Okay, if you want to follow exactly what I do it every day on Instagram. But basically, I'm just leaving no stone unturned. I'm gonna go 100% at this thing and see what happens.
Have you talked to anyone that's in the bubble? They can remain nameless if you'd like, about the sacrifice that these guys are putting forth, leaving their family and friends for so long, and what it's been like for the NHL return to play from a player standpoint.
Yeah, actually, not too much. What I've found is that when you are busy chasing your, you know, true self and doing exactly what you want to do, you kind of lose a lot of time for other things. So I kind of have a tighter, closer circle now. I've reached out. A couple guys have talked. You know, but mostly like the younger guys, right? I always seem to get along with the young guys, and they always think I'm like crazy, like getting old. I'm not a vet, but like I'm an older guy. They always think I'm crazy, but they always think it's interesting to hear things from me, how hard I'm going. I think they try to pick things up, but they're playing video games. They're relaxing. They're trying to not worry about too much. I'm sure the guys that are older that have families are having a tough time with it. But at the end of the day, they're playing hockey. You know, hopefully they're not away from their families too long. I think when they get to the conference finals, don't families get to go or something?
Yeah,
Like,
yeah.
yeah. So, you know, that's only what, one more series. So I think there's it just sucks for guys like Blake Coleman, who I played with, who, you know, had a newborn baby just as he went in. So that's just something in life that you can't control, and you just try to handle it the best you can. But yeah, I can't imagine. I don't know, I'm a hockey nut, right? And I don't have a family, so I have a kind of a different view.
What do you remember most about your first NHL game with Minnesota?
Oh man, the overbearing feeling that sticks out was just how I knew I wouldn't run out of energy that night. I don't know. It was like I wasn't nervous. I was more just like, God, I gotta use this. Like how good I feel, how pumped I am. And being in, and then the other memory that sticks out is being in warm up and standing at center ice with my back to the other team's end, and I'm looking into Minnesota's end, and I got my mom, my brother, my best friend, and my stepdad up on one side, and then my good buddy and his dad who flew in last minute, and I'm just sitting there, like looking on both sides going like, all right, we're here now. So it's we came this far. Let's try to not stop now. It's probably going to get harder. And boy, I found that out. It got real hard.
What do you make of the guys in your role, right? The NHL is such a skating league now, and not that you played in the, you know, the 90s or the early 2000s where maybe there were some straight up tough guys, but just the role of a physical player, whether it's a Tom Wilson, whether it's you know, pick your power forward, a Ryan Reeves. What do you make of just the size, the physicality, and the speed needed for a player sort of your ability in the NHL today?
I mean, I think the proof's in the pudding of what's going on right now. I mean, you look at Tampa Bay, they tried to win it kind of how Toronto does on straight skill, and they really exited quite quickly last year. And then they add guys that play the game on heart and soul with grit and competitiveness and can play the game, the Goodrows, the Blake Colemans, you know, Zach Bogosian, Luke Shen, like now they have some guys that can play that role. You need a balance. You need all types of personalities. You need all types of abilities on a team, all types of roles. You know, Boston's a heavy team. Vegas has been, and I'm surprised at the result the other night from Vancouver, but they're steamrolling pretty much. And the Islanders, I mean, Philly came back last night, but I just really think in the playoffs and when it really matters, like, do you want to be a team that just wins in the regular season, or do you want to be a team that's going to win when it, like, what's the point of having a good season and then you just crap out because you, when the going gets tough, your players fold? Like, I just don't understand the thought process. So I'm hoping that a little resurgence comes back and that guys like us are valued. And of course you have to play, have to be able to skate. That's why I'm working so hard. But I really think, like, you know, it's just strange that the game that's all in heart and passion, you know, that's kind of being forgotten at some points when just all skill. But you can't have a team of first line players. You know, the guys, first line players that are playing fourth line, aren't going to be happy. They're not going to bring the excitement to the team. They're not going to be happy playing their role. You need all types of people. So that's what I make of it. I think intimidation and that kind of game is still very alive and well, and the teams that have it are winning.
As I mentioned earlier, you spent parts of 5 years with the Iowa Wild. You know, the last couple of years you were in New Jersey, now Philadelphia's organization, not necessarily complete East Coast lifestyle, but certainly a change from the Midwest, and I'm sure different from a lot of Canada and where you grew up and all those sorts of things. But if someone asked you to describe Des Moines, what would you tell them?
Well, from my experience, it was just like a really clean, you know, flat city. You know, got the farmland around, but the parts I was living in, West Des Moines, and then going to the rink and exploring other places, it was a pretty nice place. I mean, they loved their the football, the wrestling, the contact kind of sports more. I thought it was a really nice, clean, happy place to live, quite honest with you. I can't say a bad thing about it.
When I say Tyler Graovac, what do you say?
Oh man, what do I say? I say just interesting. Let's just say that he's a good buddy of mine. I think he's actually going to come train up here. He's going to rent out his Toronto apartment to somebody on the Blues or something. And then he's going to come live here and closer to his girlfriend who lives close to here. And we're going to train together. So I'm excited about that. I haven't spent as much time with him, but talk about a guy who he's made three NHL clubs now and gotten seriously hurt every time. It's quite honestly unbelievable. Like, I always used to think, you know, guys would get hurt, oh, it ended my career. I always thought that was kind of an excuse. But he's still plugging away. You know, he's in Iowa. He makes the Wild out of camp, tears both his groins first game. He makes the Washington Capitals when he was not supposed to, gets hit by Matt Martin twice, grade three shoulder separation or AC joint. And then he gets up on Vancouver, second power play, scores a couple goals, and he somehow blocks a shot, which I've never really remembered Grail blocking shots and breaks his foot. So I think that guy is still going to have a chance to play in the NHL. Maybe we're just really big late bloomers, Joe. Maybe we both got a chance.
He's such an A-plus person as well, like yourself. How about a guy like Zach Mitchell? Have you talked to him at all lately? Another guy that you spent so much time with in Iowa.
Yeah, we have a group chat. Me, him, and Mitchie have a group chat. It's been going for quite a while. Mitchie's over in Latvia now. He's having a great time. He said the coach was doing well, but then after the first exhibition game, he was threatening to buy people out. So that was quite funny to hear the other day. But he's loved playing over there. He's a very skilled player. He's having a good time exploring different parts of the world, being in, I can't remember the, can't even pronounce the place in Russia, but now Latvia. And we have a funny little group chat. It's kind of a weird dynamic. Me and Grail are closer. Him and Grail are closer than me and Mitch kind of are, like the odds and ends of the kind of the group chat. It's a really funny dynamic. So hopefully one day when things are a little more normal, we can get back out and get out together and hang out.
You made your pro debut in April of 2014, wrapping up the first ever Iowa Wild season. And I was talking with Josh Fisher, our old PR guy, just the other day. And I said, hey, I'm going to chat with Gabe for the podcast. And I said, do you remember in Oklahoma City? And he was like, yep, Gordie Howe hat trick. It was April 18th, 2014. I had to go look it up. You fought Brandon Davidson for your first pro fight. You had a Gordie Howe hat trick that night, goal assist in a fight. Do you remember that game?
Dude, that was I don't know if it was a good thing that I came in there at the end of the year and had 4 points in 8 games. Like, that was like me and Greg, they were playing me like first line. I know we weren't very good, But I was getting so many minutes and just having fun. I was like, man, if this is what pro is going to be like, it's going to be a lot of fun. And then the next year it comes back and, you're settled into your fourth line role and everything. But yeah, I definitely remember that time. That was an absolute blast. What a city to, I think we ended the year there too. It was great.
Yep. Yeah, and actually, unfortunately, CJ Stretch won the game in overtime. I was doing a little box score digging as the Barons won it, but you did have the Gordie Howe hat trick. And I remember at the time, especially again talking with Fish about this, like it just seemed like with Zach Mitchell and you and Grajovac, it was like, man, there's some hope for the following seasons. And it just never, whatever the reason was, either the goaltending or giving up too many goals or not enough scoring. Can you pinpoint why, unfortunately, your time in Iowa just never really, no team or season clicked for the whole year and were able to get you guys over the hump?
Oh man, this is something I've tried to just forget about because it's so frustrating. The only playoff games I've played in 6 years of pro hockey have been the NHL. So it's just like, how is that even possible?
Yeah.
Coming from Owen Sound, where we play in the playoffs every year in the OHL, so, and that's where my game is supposed to be the best. So you look at that probably hasn't helped my career. But I can't really pinpoint it. No, I mean you had the carousel of coaching. I think that my first year, full year, we started like 1-10 or something.
Yeah, Kurt Kleindorst was relieved of his duties, and John Torchetti came in,
It's
and
just strange.
Torch obviously never short on personality.
No, I love Torch. He was a great guy. I haven't caught up with him in a while, but I can't really pinpoint it. Hockey's a very strange game. It's just the overarching theme I remember of that time in my life was just frustration, right? I don't even want, like it's, I can't, I think every year we thought we were going to be good, right? And I'm
Yeah.
now going into every season, no matter how good a team thinks, I'm always the guy in the locker room, especially the last two, being like, boys, if you think we're going to be good, just like wait till we have 20 injuries. Just, can we just like take it day by day here and not get too high on ourselves?
Well, listen, I mean, but as a player, you grow. As a person, you grow. And look back, 2014, I'm with you. We thought there were going to be some better, more success for some of those Iowa Wild teams, but now, later in your career, you understand it's just not that easy, no matter what's on paper.
Yeah, it's just not. And that's what I love about the game of hockey. You can write up as many things as you want. Like when I was up with Jersey, we had 2.5 lines of Binghamton Devils playing against the Edmonton Oilers trying to make the Stanley Cup playoffs, and we won 6-3. I mean, you can't draw that up any better. It was so fun to be a part of. This is a special game. It's like the whole when talent doesn't work hard, they're not that
Right.
good. But if you get a team like that starts to working hard and has all the parts, that's what's unstoppable. But not many sports teams can just will themselves to win. It comes down to those puck battles and man versus man, and that's why we love the game. It's the most competitive sport, I think.
I promise to let you go here in a second, but just a couple more things with you. Advice for a young hockey player. If there's, a parent of a youth hockey player listening today, or if at some point, one of the young Iowa Wild fans dials up this podcast, what would you tell them about just growing within the sport?
First and foremost, make sure you love it because the farther you go on, it gets real, real tough. Second of all, if you do love it, every answer is on the internet now. Like you don't even need like of course you want to go skate with good players and skills coach, but like everything's on the internet. If I had green biscuits and all this knowledge back then, oh my God, like there's just so much access to it. But then again, on top of that, once you do know you love it and you're working hard at it, just make sure you to remember that you're a person first and don't identify as a hockey player. It's just not a good idea. It sets you up for kind of having to a reckoning later. So I feel like I've gone through that myself. Make sure that hockey is in the right part of your life. Family's first. There's nothing wrong with having a good family and working hard. That's what I do now. But just don't identify as just that because it can be taken away from you in so many different ways. Make sure you're on a good, solid foundation of a human being.
You mentioned before we start our conversation a little bit about your brand. Tell our listeners what you can about this development as far as Curtis Gabriel, and again, continuing using your platform to address certain issues, but also I'm sure sort of have a unified place for it all.
Yeah, so I think if I didn't play pro hockey, that just never came about. I would have gone to school for some kind of like working out or kinesiology or something, and then I would have got into the social media space and something I've always kept tabs on a long time. And now that I feel like I'm working on things outside of hockey to kind of alleviate my mind. I train all day, and then instead of just coming home and thinking about training all day and what went well and what went wrong and what I'm doing tomorrow, I think about, well, how can I grow myself into, not only like I view it like this, I want to obviously earn a living for myself, but I want to do everything the right way. That's always what I've done through hockey. So it started with the activism kind of things, but now it's I just want to show, there's not many hockey players that are open and honest, right? So I'm trying to show what it's not, it's kind of raw, it's not super edited, it's very just what I am, who I am, what I do every day, how I'm trying to make the best out of myself and bring as many people along for the ride and help as many people as possible through the activism, through in motivation for training, through whatever it is. I'm still kind of figuring it out as we go here, but I'm expecting a lot of big things in the future. And it's just like anything, right? You start when playing hockey for when you're 5 years old, and now I'm 27. I'm still trying to get better. So it's the long game that I'm looking at here, but a lot of possibilities going forward.
One more time, the Instagram and YouTube information for our listeners.
Yeah, at Curtis Gabriel underscore on Instagram, at Curtis Gabriel on Twitter, and then just Curtis Gabriel on YouTube. Just doing pro hockey player vlogs, and I've told my whole story on there in a 10-part series. I'm gonna start posting like question and answer things. I got one coming this Sunday. I'm gonna start doing Instagram lives. Just want to engage with fans. I love just chatting and talking to good people.
Well, Curtis, boy, I haven't called you that in a long time. Really nice catching up with you, Gabes. I appreciate it, buddy. And again, continued success. Keep using your platform. I'm very proud of, what you're doing out there. It's not easy to put yourself out there. You're doing it. You're not afraid to do it. And hopefully you continue to make things better, not only for your community, but for yourself and your family, and spreading awareness and making real change. I think it's outstanding. Really appreciate you joining me today.
No problem, Joe. I appreciate the sentiments and having me on. And yeah, I just feel like hockey's supposed to be, the greatest guys, and we're always dubbed that in sports and in media, we're the humblest guys. It's like, well, why not take stands on these things? Why not open up a little bit, show what we do? And I truly believe that the hockey community is full of good people. Whether or not our beliefs are the same, I think they're going to value, someone trying to make a change and show a little bit more about the game and grow the game. So thanks very much, Joe, man. I really appreciate it.
Very long conversation, but much needed with Curtis Gabriel, the Wild Winger. Such a long conversation. Probably wrap it up here one-on-one with Joe on another podcast episode in the books. Thanks to all of our great Iowa Wild corporate partners. Our interview today with Curtis Gabriel, presented by Buzzer Billy's, one block south of Wells Fargo Arena and the official pregame home of your Iowa Wild. So my thanks to Buzzer Billy's. Till next time, not much of a mailbag. Didn't get too many questions. And quite frankly, we talked to Gabe so long that I'm going to scrap it anyway. So till the next episode, thanks for everybody tuning in. And the official sign-off, of course, is to steal your tray tables in an upright lock position, because this podcast episode is over. Until next time, stay safe, keep it real, and thanks for listening to One-on-One with Joe O'Donnell.